Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Modeling Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined this week by Ken Levin and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing this week?
Good, good.
I'm doing good. How are you?
All right. Weather is decent, I guess, for the beginning of March, so that's always good. All right, so promote, extend, trade today. And today, if you didn't already know, is Kent Tecuve's birthday. He was a reliever in the 70s and 80s, mainly with Pittsburgh and Philly. And he's basically like a workhouse reliever. He has a couple of records for most innings thrown by a relief pitcher. And he was pretty good. A couple of, I think, All-Star nominations. But he's more remembered for his kind of unorthodox sidearm / submarine pitching mechanics.
And he had glasses, right?
Yeah, he was a kind of doofy looking guy.
Like he looked like your science teacher, but he would also strike you out.
Yes.
Like Tyler Clippard looking motherfucker.
So what Met relief pitchers with odd mechanics are we going to promote, extend, or trade this week? First, we have Chad Bradford. Then we have Joe Smith. And last but not least is Darren O'Day. And I guess it kind of makes it easier because they literally all played on like within a year or two of each other.
Yeah, same era. We should all remember the three of them.
Yeah.
Well, O'Day. So are we doing this in terms of Mets careers? Because like,
or impact on the Mets, however you want to look at it and rationalize it.
O'Day's is unfortunately infamous.
Yeah.
Where he was DFA'd for no reason, really. But I guess Joe Smith, I would. What's the best one? Extend? Promote?
Yeah.
But like, I would extend Joe Smith, promote Bradford, and then trade O'Day because it makes me sad.
Yeah, I think that's what I would do as well.
I'm going to extend O'Day because I think he had the biggest impact on all those teams just because he wasn't there, you know,
that makes sense.
If he was there, the Mets probably would have been the actual difference maker because they literally just needed one fucking reliever, you know?
Just one.
Just one.
That it's true. Like, I don't want to say the difference between them winning the World Series was Darren O'Day, but they very clearly needed someone like him.
They literally needed one relief pitcher and one okay starting pitcher at any point in time, and they had neither. And it is just unfortunate. All right. So spring training is, we're like a little bit over a week plus, whatever it is, into spring training. So we'll just look at all of the Mets prospects that are playing. We'll just go over how they're doing. Just kind of a generalized recap. So our number one prospect, Francisco Alvarez. He's played in 5 games so far, and he is 0-for-8 with 0 home runs, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. Our number two prospect, Kota Senga, he pitched in 1 game, and he threw 2 innings, allowing 1 hit, 1 run, 1 earned run, with 2 walks and 2 strikeouts. Our number three prospect, Brett Beatty, he's appeared in 9 games so far, and he is 8-for-17 with 1 home run, 1 walk, and 4 strikeouts. Number four prospect, Kevin Parada, he's appeared in 7 games, and he is 1-for-6 with no home runs, no walks, and 2 strikeouts. Our number seven prospect, Alex Ramirez, he's appeared in 9 games, and he is 3-for-12 with no home runs, 1 walk, and 6 strikeouts. Our number eight prospect, Mark Vientos, he has appeared in 9 games, and he is 7-for-23 with 2 home runs, no walks, and 8 strikeouts. Our number nine prospect, Ronnie Mauricio, he's appeared in 9 games, and he is currently 5-for-13 with 3 home runs, 1 walk, and 2 strikeouts. Our number 13 prospect, Stanley Consuegra, he's appeared in 2 games, and he is 0-for-2 with no homers, no walks, and no strikeouts. Our number 17 prospect, Jose Budo, he's appeared in 2 games, and he's thrown a total of 3.2 innings, allowing 2 earned runs on 2 hits, with 2 walks and 7 strikeouts. Our number 19 prospect, Bryce Mantista-Oka, he's appeared in 2 games, and he has thrown 2 scoreless innings, no hits, 2 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Our number 23 prospect, Eric Orsi, he's appeared in 2 games, and he also has 2 scoreless innings, with 2 hits allowed, 3 walks, and 3 strikeouts. And finally, our number 25 prospect, William Lugo, he's appeared in 2 games, and he is 2-for-2 with a home run, no walks, and no strikeouts. Now, has anything stuck out for you guys so far?
Budo has a new pitch. That's like a cutter slider thing. And I think that we talked about this, I'm pretty sure, but that ups his ability to impact the major league team in a positive way, I think, in my opinion. Senga looked good outside of, I don't know, Steve, did you watch it? Because it was on MLB TV because the Mets weren't.
No, I didn't see any of it.
So he was throwing 98. He got Jordan Walker on a really nice forkball. He threw his ghost fork. That was one of the only times I feel like he threw it, but it was nasty.
Yeah, I think he threw it twice, and he spiked the other one.
Yeah, and that one, it was nasty. Yeah. Like you could really see why it gets his – like, it literally just fell off the face of the earth right into the dirt, and Walker had no shot. But then the control stuff was there. He walked the first 2 batters and got behind Arenado or Goldschmidt. I can't remember what order they hit, but they were hitting 3 and 4. But then he got out of the inning. So he might be one of those guys who kind of lets a lot of people on and gets out of it because he's just really good, you know. But I very clearly see the talent there for him. And Mauricio, honestly, hitting 7 million home runs from the left side. He's much maligned, but that's always really nice to see, regardless of how you feel about him as a prospect.
Yeah, I mean, let's see. Beatty has a home run. Vientos has 2 home runs.
Beatty looks good. So does he.
And Mauricio has 3 home runs. So, I mean, look at, and William Lugo, let's not malign him. He has 1 homer. So.
Yeah. And I feel like Parada hasn't really played, but we're going to get more guys playing now that the World Baseball Classic's about to start. All those guys are going to start having to play more.
Yeah, I mean, he's appeared in 7 games and he's had 6 at-bats. Same thing with Francisco Alvarez. They're just not really...
They're all like late-inning pinch hits. And yeah. It's hard to judge you based off that.
Let's see, who else? And everything else is kind of par the course, I guess. You know, yeah. Alex Ramirez is doing what you would expect. You know, he's Consuegra, same thing. I don't know, he's not really going to be much of a factor. Same thing with William Lugo, not really going to be much of a factor in terms of, you know, getting helium.
Agreed. I thought Vientos has looked pretty good. He's his 2 home runs. I know at least one of them was he was facing a righty, which is nice to see. But
I think Florio too, or Florio.
Yes, it was. He like homered up Dylan Florio. Yeah, that's a real pitcher. It's not like some rando guy who's playing. You know, like that's a major league guy, a pitcher, and he smoked it dead center. So honestly, I think all the kids have looked good.
Yeah.
Beatty looks like he should. I tweeted this out today, but Beatty should probably be on the opening day roster. I know that it's a weird fit, but
I think the plan should be to go into opening day with like him and Escobar in like a soft platoon.
And they've been putting Escobar in left, and I think that helps. If Escobar could also play the outfields, then you don't need Ruff. You could cut Ruff and have Beatty and Escobar split third base, and when Beatty starts, then Escobar could also start. Just he could give Canna a day or Marte a day, whatever. And you move Canna over to right. You could do a lot of stuff with Escobar if he's playing the outfield at a. I mean, he's going to be better out there than Darren Ruff at 36. You know.
Yeah, I mean, Ruff hasn't. What is Ruff's injury? He has like a hand injury or something.
He has a arthritis in his wrist.
Okay. Listen, hey. Don't make fun of arthritis in the wrist.
No,
okay?
I mean it's not. It's just whenever you think of a 36-year-old batter, you really want them to have wrist arthritis. I think.
Yeah, but
you know, it makes hitting major league pitching significantly easier. Wrist damage.
True.
Wrists are killers for batters, and he was already looking like he was losing bat speed, so it's a bit concerning.
Yeah, I mean it's. Obviously not. I mean, there's never a good time to have an injury, but I feel like for Ruff especially, it's a bad time when you really want to kind of come to camp and show that everything last year was just an aberration, that you're still going to be able to play at a major league level. And the fact now that, you know, Beatty's doing good, Vientos is doing good, you know, the two questionable guys in terms of making the roster, I mean at a spring training anyway, it's just not looking good for Mr. Ruff.
It's just like, I don't know, he really did not need to, like you were saying, really did not need to be hurt, and at this point I don't really know what's keeping him around unless he destroys spring from here on out, which he could. He's going to play almost every day, I'm sure, because everyone's half the Mets are going to be at the World Baseball Classic. Pete's going to not be around, so we could just play first base almost every day. Give him a real shot, but
it's going to be interesting to see how long. I mean, obviously, like you see, you know, he could finally get on the field and just demolish the ball and silence all the doubters, but I don't think that's very likely.
No, I would
not. Something you want to, you know, bet on.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting now to see going forward how long the Darren Ruff experience lasts, you know?
I think they should give him camp, give him the rope of... There's nothing really... There's no first-base prospect that needs to be playing.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you know, this is... We're only basically... I think this is only 10 games, whatever it is, of spring training. So there's still literally an entire month to go. And, you know, hopefully not, but Beatty could crater, Vientos could crater, all these, you know, guys that are showing up now could, you know, fade away. And, you know, then it's not really a question. Like, obviously now Darren Ruff is going to make the team, but also something I would not bet on.
And someone could get hurt. You never know. Like,
yeah,
over the last 2 days, the Mets have had 2 pitchers get hurt. It's not Peterson doesn't seem to be serious. They said it's like a foot bruise, but Quintana left the start today with a left side tightness. Like, you never know. Beatty could have a left side tightness in 2 weeks, and then Ruff is making the team because Beatty got hurt, and Ronnie's definitely not ready, even if you like him, and Alvarez is not going to DH. You know what I mean? So there's plenty of time.
All good problems, I guess.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I mean, this isn't like the 2011 Mets where it's Scott Hairston or bust.
She's not the pod.
Not a great time. All right, now moving on. We have a couple of emails this week. This is going to be basically our main focus here. Because full disclosure, here's the thing. I used to have my personal email and our podcast email on my phone, the Gmail app, and I'd just switch accounts when I was looking at my email and then looking at the podcast email. And it got really annoying after a while because 99% of our podcast emails are spam. We get a lot of match.com emails for someone named Chanel, so I hope she finds the person out there for her. We get a ton of emails in French, something about Morocco. Get a ton of emails from some kind of business. It's called Edgecombe Potters. So I guess it's like a mom and pop pottery store. It's in Maine. So I guess if you're ever in Maine, go ahead and shop there. We get a bunch of emails from the Auction Armory, which is an online gun store, which I didn't know existed. And it's a little concerning. But, so much spam. So when I got a new phone a couple months ago, I didn't put the podcast email on the Gmail app. And then a couple of weeks ago, when we started doing the top prospect list, I said to myself, I should check the podcast email. I remembered, that it exists. I forgot the password. And then I kind of forgot about it. But long story short, we have about 2 months of emails to catch up on. Most of it is spam, but we have a few legitimate ones too. So
will we also be reading the spam?
I don't think we should, but I mean, I guess we could. No, I don't think it's very topical though. Whereas the emails from our listeners, they are topical. So, the first question comes from Full Stack Sam, and Sam says, "I'm not the smartest muchacho, but it's 1:13 in the morning, and I'm looking at some MILB numbers. Why would the Mets be so blasé about their number 4 pick, Jake Mangum, who hit very well and played good defense in AAA, but keep Khalil Lee, who's never performed at AAA and doesn't have plus defense? If we're going to roster one, what am I missing that 29.5 teams knew?" So basically, there's two questions there, I guess. A, why trade Mangum? And B, why choose Lee over Mangum? And that second part is much easier, I think, to answer. And basically, Lee just has no value currently. He's coming off of his season where he hit 211, 326, 366 in 100 games at Syracuse. And now he has some very legitimate legal issues that are hanging over his head, too. And, it was kind of exciting when the Mets acquired him because, he made some mechanical adjustments. There was some good feedback, and then he had a pretty good 2021. But basically, Lee has a longer track record of not performing than actually performing. So, who's going to want Lee, even as a player, as a throw-in in a trade, Would you want Lee if you guys are making a team?
I mean, I'm probably cutting him if I'm the Mets. So
I probably would have already cut him.
Yeah, I would have cut him when the news first came out.
So, yeah, I mean, that's why Lee was not included in the trade, because who the hell else wants him? Now, in terms of why was Mangum traded, I mean, he has value. He's a guy that has more value than, he probably gets credit for. But it's value that's very easily replicated and does not really translate. He has more soft value to the team than statistical value, if that makes sense. If he retired tomorrow, I shouldn't say if that. Let me rephrase that. So basically, I was talking with my friend Dan about Mangum, and he's basically like the outfield version of Luis Guillorme.
I don't even think he's that good of a hitter.
I mean, we don't know, and we'll never know, but...
I mean, we will. He's going to play in Miami, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, however much. But basically, to date, Luis Guillorme has 2.7 F-WAR and 3.1 R-WAR. And, you know, he just doesn't get a lot of playing time, and the things that he does add value to, they don't really translate well in terms of, you know, statistical baseball numbers. And Jake Mangum is basically that same kind of player. You know, he's not going to get too much playing time. And, you know, a lot of the value that he adds to a team, be it like, okay, we could be confident in our outfielder, or, yeah, this guy is going to be able to move a batter over, or, yeah, he could steal a base in a pinch, whatever. You know, that stuff doesn't really translate well statistically. And, you know, it is what it is, unfortunately. It's just that kind of player can be very easily replaced. I mean, Tim LeCastro is basically that right now.
And, like, they signed Tommy Pham. So Mangum's not making the team over Pham, because Pham is going to be a better hitter against lefties, and that's what they need him to do.
Like, right, we're talking like fourth or maybe fifth outfielder here.
Yeah, Mangum, even when they drafted him, when he was coming up through the system, the profile was never this guy's a future starter. It's this guy's a future bench bat. Not even a bench bat. Like a backup outfielder who could play three spots and won't hit for much, because he's a singles hitter. And even with his uptick in power, it's not like he's hitting home runs like crazy. It's more power than he used to hit, but it's mostly like doubles now. He's not a bad player, but then they got Jeff Brigham, who's like an actual reliever, who's like an actual interesting reliever, who is, he's a little on the older side. He's already 30, but the Mets are seemingly making more strides in pitch development, where he could definitely make strides and become a legitimate reliever in the major leagues. He was pretty good last year, if I remember correctly. I'd have to look at his stats. And they got Eliezer Hernandez, who is a candidate to replace Trevor Williams, who they need more pitching depth. They need more starting pitching depth, because as we all, every single Met fan knows, in this, they had like one starting pitcher under contract coming into the season or whatever. It was one reliever too, with Drew Smith before Diaz signed. Like, they needed the pitching depth way more than they needed a fourth outfielder who's a glove first guy, because they could go out and sign Jurickson and Profar if they really want to play the corners, and then you're fine. You don't even, you know what I mean? Like, you'll be able to find your glove first fourth outfielder in February, every February, for $2 million. So I'd rather them get the starting pitching, the pitching depth. That's really what it comes down to for me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it is an upgrade to the team. The end.
Because they didn't give him away. Like,
right.
I don't want to say that the narrative around it, but he wasn't DFA'd and claimed, like, they traded him for two arms who are, I know Eliezer has options, who are going to impact the Mets way more than Mangum ever will. Because if Mangum's playing, then three dudes got hurt anyway. The way the roster is set up.
Right. And the most that the value, like I was saying, like his any value that he provides is like soft value. The most that he's going to be doing in terms of like influencing like WPA is like individual catches, individual at bats, a relay throw that's really good, whatever. Like, they're such minor things. Whereas Eliezer Hernandez or Brigham, like, they're going to be throwing legitimate innings. High leverage, medium leverage, low leverage, whatever. But those innings are going to be more influential than the individual plays that Mangum might be playing. Or, you know, in theory, if they kept Lee as well, you know, the same mm-hmm. thing applies.
Like, I think Mangum could play in the majors in that type of role. I don't think he has enough bat in him to start in a first division way like the Mets would need him to.
Yeah, that's why I said that Luis Guillorme comparison is very apt.
I think Guillorme's a better player than him.
No, I'm not doubting that. I remember saying I love Luis Guillorme. Do you think though, if he started, you know, 140 games a year, would he still be flirting with 300? Probably not. But, you know, in 60 games, in 80 games, whatever, like, yeah, he could do that. I wouldn't trust him as a full-time everyday player, but as the role that he has now, I think he's too good to be he's too good to be a replacement, but not enough to be an everyday starter on a first division team.
Yeah, like Luis Guillorme could start for the Marlins right now.
Just yeah, like Jake Mangum will be starting for the Marlins as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's also why, like, good for you, Jake Mangum. You went to a place where you have a chance to, you know, you'll have more opportunity to.
He's back in SEC country with his people. So.
But yeah, there's gonna be a million times they could sign a Jake Mangum.
Yeah, I mean, that's what do we like Jake Mangum? Sure. Do we have an affinity for him because he was drafted? Sure. And he came up through the system, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's a player profile that doesn't really have too much an impact, and it's just very easily replaceable. So hard to cry over it, you know?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right. Our next email is from Michael from Forest Hills. And it's a pretty basic question. Has the restructuring of the minor leagues had any noticeable effects on minor league prospects? The end. This is a hard one to answer because it's kind of an abstract question. And the best answer I could give, maybe you guys can give a better one, but I think the answer is definitely it has. But we can't really say right now, given that we don't have, like, any absolute data, and we might not ever be able to say really, other than, you know, kind of just what our gut and our instincts and intuition says.
Yeah.
I mean, you used to have, you know, rookie ball and short A teams, Kingsport and Brooklyn, the short A Brooklyn Cyclones. Now everybody who's basically past the complex is thrown into St. Lucie. So you have semi-advanced IFA guys, you know, and Alex Ramirez type. Semi-advanced prep, domestic prep players, you know, a Calvin Ziegler. So-so college guys, Justin Guerrero. Advanced college guys that are just kind of getting some light work in. Your Kevin Paradas, your Blade Tidwells. Everybody is in this one giant pool. You're basically throwing players that are aged, you know, 18 to 23 or so with various backgrounds, and they're all playing against each other. So, you know, to a player who is even a so-so college bat, you know, Calvin Ziegler might not be that difficult of a pitcher because, you know, you're a so-so college player from a so-so conference. You know, you've seen decent velocity or you've seen solid curveballs before, you know. To a player that is just coming up from the DSL or FCL complexes, a so-so college pitcher, you know, a Paul Gervais, he might be Nolan Ryan to you. You've never seen a guy with, like, really good velocity or that can locate their pitches or throws a decent off-speed pitch. So when we had Kingsport and we had short A Cyclones, you could kind of segregate all these different groupings of players and everyone could have more linear, I guess that's the best way of putting it, linear, you know, developmental progression.
It was more methodical before.
Yeah, that's a better way, more methodical progression, yeah.
And, like, I think guys are going to get lost in the sauce sometimes when they needed that extra half step because some guys are going to. And There's also just less roster spots.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, the most obvious one, too. Yeah.
Like, it's pure less roster spots and more, like Ken just said, more competition per spot. So when two guys are battling it out to go to high A before, you could send them to short season. You know, you could send the loser, quote unquote. It's not a loser, but, you know, to short A, and then he goes there. But now he might just get cut. Or now he might just be a bench guy and doesn't play ever, and that stunts his development that way. So it's just there was no reason to do this other than saving a couple bucks comparatively for owners.
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at a guy like Jeff McNeil. He would have been probably a guy that got lost in all this if he was still a minor leaguer at this point. He had, you know, 3 seasons in a row where he basically hardly played because of injury and whatever else. I mean, that's the prime candidate for a guy that's going to get cut. Obviously, yeah. Jeff McNeil has thrived, more than thrived. He's become one of the premier, you know, infielders in the game. Imagine, you know, of all those players that did get cut, you know, I'm sure that there's a McNeil in there for, you know, the Mets and for every other team. Or if not, you know, someone that might have become so good, someone who could have become okay, or a role player, or, you know, up and down pitcher in relief, or whatever the case may be, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's made it a lot more difficult for everybody, basically, long story short. Except for MLB owners. They can squeeze a couple of nickels tighter now.
I had this thought. I wonder that if indie leagues kind of not thrive from this, but they start getting some better players and they start becoming a more legitimate alternative when guys do get cut. Like when the 22-year-old guy gets cut, who would have went to another level, just goes to play indie ball, and then he pops, and then he gets signed again, you know?
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, that's also another thing where I was saying at the beginning, it's kind of abstract, and we don't, like...
It's also still early. Like,
yeah.
We don't have the data for that yet. Like, it's just too soon.
I mean, that is an interesting, you know, that is something that would be interesting to look at, to see if all the independent leagues that, you know, did kind of get some of these excess players that got cut, you know, to see how they performed and whether or not they got invitations back into affiliated baseball based on those performances or not. But I mean, it's such a broad thing. There's so many ways that you can, you know, look at it. But I'm sure that in the coming years, there will be plenty of smarter people than us examining more data than we have the capability of doing. All right. Our next question is from Carlos B. And he said, is it me or do the Mets not really have any high-end pitching prospects? I feel like there's no one worth mentioning arm-wise. Players like Hamill, Tidwell, Ziegler, Diaz all feel like solid pitchers who might someday make it, but they all feel more David Peterson than David Price. I miss the days when it feels like every year the Mets had a new ace to debut. The Harvey to Wheeler to DeGrom to Syndergaard to Mats a little bit era feels so long ago. End quote.
I mean, they don't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
They don't, but they do wrong. They've had a pretty exciting slate of, you know, position player prospects come through recently. So,
and this comes in waves and cycles,
and the system hasn't been great.
No, it hasn't.
I think, sorry, Steve, go ahead.
I think Tidwell could possibly become like a front end kind of pitcher, but I don't see like ace potential, but you know, like a really good strong, like a Stroman kind of guy, you know, like would you want Marcus Stroman to be your ace pitcher? No.
But if he's your three, yeah.
Yeah. Is he like your two or your three, a guy that, you know, is pretty reliable? Yes. I think that some of these guys do have that kind of potential. That's not ace potential like Harvey, Wheeler, DeGrom, Syndergaard. But it's better than nothing, you know.
And, like, this conversation's a little different. If Allen, there's an alternate reality where Allen doesn't have a 75-year Tommy John surgery and recovery. And I don't know. It's just this stuff comes in cycles, and the Mets have not had good pitching development internally for a long time. So they were a good pitching organization when they were developing all those aces, and then they fell behind and they stopped developing them. So you don't really have to think too hard about why. And then now they're starting to get better again, I think. So I could see us starting to get more guys who are who are coming through the system and are good pitchers. You know, there's just more, like, they're teaching Budo new pitches and they're doing stuff like that, and they're kind of being a smarter org. So it'll just eventually, all these guys, one of them will pop or two of them will pop.
Mm-hmm. In a couple of years, we might be talking about the Hamill to Tidwell to Ziegler to Diaz. Never know. All right, now our last question is from Brian Florentine, and he says, quote, would abandoning hitting from both sides of the plate help Ronnie Mauricio? Over the past 2 years, he hit 253, 299, 464 with 39 home runs, 42 walks, and 185 strikeouts in 775 plate appearances as a left-handed batter versus right-handers. And 250, 280, 432 with 7 home runs, 8 walks, and 52 strikeouts in 219 plate appearances as a right-handed batter versus lefties. He's obviously played more as a left-hand batter than as a right-hand batter, but all of the numbers are just better regardless. End quote. So I was...
I actually like this question.
Yeah, it is an interesting question. I was doing research and I found an article from Fangraphs regarding Cedric Mullins, the Orioles outfielder, and he basically credited his 2021 breakout and all the continuing success that he's had since then to his decision to stop hitting from both sides of the plate and just focus only on hitting for the left side, his natural side. So in theory, yeah, Mauricio could become a better player just focusing on, you know, hitting from once, presumably his left side, since the numbers are better marginally there. You know, in theory, that could help him. Conversely, though, you know, his numbers are better facing same side lefties, lefty on lefty, and righty. You know, basically, his overall numbers might take a hit because the same side, you know, matchups might be so bad that overall production gets, you know, pulled down. So I don't know. I do think, though, that the numbers are overall not really that dramatic to say that it could be a magical fix for Mauricio, which is sad, I guess. I mean, basically, it's the same exact batting average. It's like 20 points of OBP and 30 points of slugging, which is not really that much. So, I mean, even if he did only hit from the left side starting tomorrow, and hit for that career line, it's still not going to be like a magic fix, you know?
Yeah. And like, I do think his swing is way better left-handed. Like, there's clear problems with his right-handed swing, and his left-handed swing is pretty, it's good. But his issues aren't the swing. His issues are he makes bad swing decisions and he can't lay off pitches. And I don't think that changes if he just bats lefty. Like, him just sticking to one side of the plate won't stop him from swinging at the pitch at his eyes. You know what I mean? He'll just do it only left-handed because these issues are I don't want to say abstract, but like Cedric Mullins, his swing, he couldn't hit right-handed. Like, he just, it's not like he was making bad decisions. It's that when he would swing righty against a lefty, the right-handed swing was so bad it didn't work. So then when he was like bunting right-handed for. It was something like that. I can't remember specifically what he was doing, but he was like bunting in almost all of his at-bats as a righty because he couldn't hit. And it's like, it's not like he was making poor decisions. He just couldn't hit. It's Mauricio's issues is that he makes poor decisions when he hits. And I don't know how to fix that out with, I think if he made better decisions, he would be fine. Him being a switch hitter. Like, every switch hitter has a better side. Even the best ones. Carlos Beltran had a better side, you know? Like, it's not like switch hitters are completely one-for-one perfect on both sides. It's that the reason why they stay switch hitters is their issues are fixable. And I don't want to say Ronnie's aren't. That makes it sound like he's a lost cause. It's his issues are abstract. They're not in the... You can't break down the tape and look at his issues. His issues are like, don't swing at that pitch at your face. Lay off that pitch in the dirt. You know, like that stuff, which doesn't really change if he's just a switch hitter or not a switch hitter.
And this is something that we don't really have public data for. I mean, I guess if we wanted to, you could literally chart out every single at-bat that he's had and the placement of the pitches and what pitches they had, but that's beyond my pay grade. I'm sure the major league, you know, the major league teams have this data. I mean, there are people that are paid, I'm sure, a lot of money, or if not a lot of money, more than we get paid to do those kinds of things. So if the data was there and it was telling the Mets that, you know, his swing decisions are much worse as a right-handed batter than they are as a left-handed batter, and that would behoove Ryan Mauricio to only bat from the left-handed side, I'm sure they would have broached that with him, you know? So,
It's tough because, like, I could see why you dream on Mauricio. Just look at his spring. He's hitting a million home runs. And if he could continue to do that, then he'd be... He's a fine prospect. I feel like he gets a little... I don't know. It's weird because he's like a major league player. But I think he's like a... It's kind of similar to Jake Mangum, where I think Mauricio was going to start on bad teams and be a backup on good ones. And maybe he jerks and profars his way into being like a quality player for a good team who plays sometimes and moves all over the place. But even then, like, Profar was a better prospect, even with his weird, like, probably being too hyped prospect life that he had, career, I guess. I don't know. He's a weird profile because I feel like he's almost, I don't want to say he's underrated, but even I do this too. I'm like, oh, he's terrible, trade him. But he's definitely a major league talented player. It's just, I don't know how good he's going to be. He might hit 200 and have a 280 on base percentage. And then it's, what's the point, you know?
Right. I mean, he could be a, what's the guy's name? Like Mark Reynolds or Chris Davis, you know, like guys that could just hit for Noah, basically do one thing and one thing only. And that's hit home runs.
One of my friends comped him to Rougned Odor. And that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Like you look at his career and he was like, okay, like he was just a fine guy. He just hit home runs and that's it. And if he does that, then he's going to be a regular on bad teams and good teams will try to leverage him into the perfect situations for him to maximize his potential.
I mean, a lot of people will make the comparison of Javi Baez, which is not a particularly apt comparison. A much better one is Rougned Odor. They both have similar strengths and weaknesses. But, you know, without the Javi Baez's bat speed or defensive, you know, presence as well.
And Baez was one for one. Like, Baez's talent, what he was able to do in his prime was his bat to ball and his bat speed and everything else. No one, don't try to be like him. Like, don't do it because you're not going to do, you're just not going to. He could do it. And he was a unicorn for that. And I think guys in that mold are just going to struggle to actually be able to play at the level that he did for as long as he did. And even now, he's 30 and he's not good anymore. Like, it's not like he didn't age gracefully.
He bucked the trend and he had his last decent year with the Mets, which is usually the opposite. Usually everyone has their first bad year with the Mets. So.
Like, Baez just turned 30, and he had a 90 weighted runs created plus last year and hit 238, 278, 393. I could see Ronnie doing that in the majors, and that's not a good player. So, because it's going to be poor swing decisions, and he's never on base. And that's going to be the big problem for him.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is Mauricio is so good in terms of everything else. His one thing is
absurdly talented.
Yeah, it's.
But there's a limit to how far talent alone can get you, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, as we've seen.
Or even talent and extremely hard work can get you.
Yeah, I mean, that's true also. Like,
yeah, I'm not saying. Yeah.
He hasn't progressed Mauricio, but that doesn't mean that he's not putting the work. You know, he might be he's
playing baseball year-round for years now.
Yeah.
And I
between the Dominican and here.
I want him to succeed. It would be great. Like, please prove me wrong.
He would be very fun, yeah.
And it would be an extremely fun profile to see in the big leagues because a guy who he's speedy and he's hitting a lot of home runs and with the Mets, since Lindor's here, he would be moving all around the diamond. It would be a really fun bench player or like quasi starter, I guess, maybe like Ben Zobrist, like where he's playing all over the place. But it's unfortunate that his one issue, because every player, unless you're like Mike Trout, has issues. And even Mike Trout, when he was young, had issues and then he fixed them because he's Mike Trout. But his one issue is like glaring. It's not like his one issue is, oh, he strikes out a little too much, or oh, it, you know, it's his one issue is that his swing decisions are like, they're bad.
Yeah, it's of all the issues that a player could have, issues with making a contact and a 0.1 good contact are the hardest to fix.
But even if you didn't make it, like Joey Gallo doesn't make a ton of contact, but when he does, he destroys the ball, and when he doesn't, he walks. So right. Like, if he could do that, or like a Jay Bruce type, there's plenty of players. Adam Dunn, going back years now. But the problem is he doesn't do the second part. He doesn't do the walking part. And if you don't do the both in tandem, then it's really hard for you to be a major league player.
Mm-hmm.
Like his weighted runs created plus in his career, in every level. In 2008, in rookie ball, he split it. He split in two levels. He had a 101 WRC plus and a 61 WRC plus. In A ball at 18 in 2019, he had a 93 WRC plus. In high A because then 2020 was the COVID year. In high A in 2021 at 20, he had a 94 WRC plus. Then he moved up and played a few games in double A, eight games, and destroyed the ball, 124 WRC plus. Then last year he repeated double A for 123 games and had a 104 WRC plus. Like he's just like around league average in the minors. So he needs to take that next step in order to become a prospect that we could really look at to impact the Mets, you know?
Mm-hmm. And even a boost of, let's say,
if he had an on-base percentage of 340 instead of 296, I'm having a different conversation.
I mean, then he's possibly like a top player in prospect in all baseball if he's at 340 with the power and everything.
Ken said 320. Yeah, if he's at 320, I'm fine. I'm like, all right. Yeah,
like the Daniel Murphy before he went ape shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, I could deal with that. At third base for a little bit, you platoon him so he faces more righties. Maybe he DHs some when Vogelbach leaves because he's not going to be here forever. Maybe he learns to play the outfield and you can kind of move him around. And sure. But his on-base percentage last year was 296 in double A. It's like, come on, like, if it doesn't start in a 3 in double A, what is it going to do in triple A, let alone the majors, you know?
I mean, triple A is probably going to be, most of the time, there's really no difference. You could even say a lot of times position player prospects, legit prospects, like Mauricio is, have a easier time in triple A because you're also, you know, double A has more of a preponderance of other top prospects, whereas triple A, it's kind of more quad A guys and veterans that are on like the taxi squad for the major league teams and whatever else. And a lot of times like players have an easier time in triple A, but a guy like Mauricio, I think it would be exasperated even more because you're having those guys that are, you know, the I don't know why his name came to mind, but you're having the Tim Reddings of the world on the triple A rosters, you know, that are throwing junk because that's really all they have left at this point. And Mauricio's kryptonite is junk. I should amend that. Kryptonite junk that he is not able to recognize early enough.
Yeah. And like We're tough on Vientos, but I think even a guy like Vientos is going to have more utility this year than because you'll be able to really hard platoon him against the only make him face lefties in certain situations as a DH, and he'll be fine. But it's like I understand the excitement around Ronnie because he has like a unicornish skill set when you break it down, but then you look at the flaws and they're so tall to overcome. It's just he's a very complicated prospect for only being 21. And he's also been around forever, it feels like.
Yep.
I don't know, it's tough.
Yeah. It would be nice if things click this year, but I'm not really counting on it.
Even if it clicks from one side, then you have something going.
Yeah, the ultimate goal obviously is to make it to the major leagues in some capacity. And if he's able to do something as only a left-handed hitter, as only a right-handed hitter, whatever it is, yeah, okay, now you're starting to have utility as for the major league team and more likely to make it.
Yeah.
In his state right now, he does not have that. I mean, the one thing he has going for him is his youth.
Yeah.
I mean, he's 21 turning 22. He could develop, you know, spend the next 2 years in AA/AAA, whatever, and be 24, which is, you know, not old. It's, you know, he's starting to get a little long in the tooth for a prospect, but for a baseball player, not really.
Yeah, like the Dodgers have guys like that who come up at 25 because mm-hmm. they've toiled away in the minors and fixed all the and worked out the issues that they had. And those guys are never perfect, but they've worked themselves into being able to contribute at the major league level in a specialized way. And it's just Beatty lapping him doesn't help, I think, for perception wise either, where Beatty came into the organization later and very clearly is better. And just not all the issues, but every year we came into the year like, hey, Beatty needs to hit the ball in the air more. And he did. Beatty needs to do this better. And he did. The only thing he hasn't really improved like crazy is his defense. I don't know how far that's going to ever improve, but you could live with it if he's hitting. So it's tough when your contemporary has basically shot up the boards to be a global top 25 prospect and you keep falling too. So fans, it's going to be hard for people to like,
right. I mean,
it's hard. It's
coming
just
hard. Coming into the 2021 season in Brooklyn, you had Alvarez, Beatty and Mauricio were, you know, the three Musketeers, and two of those guys now are legitimately much better, had two very good seasons and are basically knocking on the door of the major league level. Mm-hmm. And then there's Mauricio, unfortunately, who
and he just hasn't gotten better in the things mm-hmm. that he needs to. He's kind of stayed the same, and maybe just more reps will do it. But he has a lot of reps. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is because I don't know how you fix swing decisions. I understand how you fix mechanics, and I understand how you fix other things, but fixing someone's split second decision making seems very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure some team will want to and try, and he will be traded at the deadline for someone.
Yeah, I mean, he is a guy that, you know, like you mentioned, his career minor league numbers are basically slightly below league average or slightly above it. But he will always have more, at least, you know, for the next couple of years, he will always have more value than that just because of the prospect hype and everything that surrounded him.
Yeah, you look at the loud power and the athleticism and the ability to whenever I've seen him, he's looked good at short. I know some people have seen him and said he's looked bad. Every time I've seen him, he's looked good. He's made nice plays. He looks fluid. You know, he's probably a little too tall and now he's getting a little too muscular. He might have to move, but I've been impressed with his defense whenever I've seen him live. So I could see a team being like, yeah, sure. For our reliever, I'll take a swing at that. It's better than taking a swing at, like, I don't know, whoever, Stanley Consuegra, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure a team will dream on him and try to fix those chase issues, but I don't know. I don't know how to do that, and I feel like it's difficult from the outside looking in.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know. like we were saying before, like, we don't know how much work Mauricio himself has put in. I'm sure that he's put in a ton, because this is basically what he's done his entire life and what he wants to do for the rest of his adult life, too. So I'm sure no shortcuts are being taken. And
oh, yeah, I don't want to say, I don't want to make it seem like I think he's that, because I don't think that's true.
Right. No, I'm just saying, like, he's putting in the work, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it behooves the major league team to do what they can, what they think they can, whatever, to help Mauricio along, too. So I'm sure they're doing whatever their collective brain trust thinks is going to work, but hasn't yet. So, yeah, I don't know what can be done either.
Yeah.
Although knowing the Mets with something like Dom Smith, maybe he just needs, like, LASIK surgery, and then all of a sudden he's the best player in baseball.
But even Dom is a pretty good example. Like, Dom had that shortened season where he was really good, and then, well, I think he got hurt. He was good, and then he got hurt, and then the COVID year he was good. I can't remember. It was, like, two short years. But that doesn't even equal, like, a full season. And then he just wasn't really good anymore, because his issues of not hitting for power and not driving the ball enough popped back up again when the ball got dejuiced. And I don't know how you could fix that mechanically, but also some guys just aren't going to hit the ball for power, you know? You could put them in the weight room. You could do all that other stuff. Dom Smith is never – I'm not going to – he definitely worked hard at his craft and all that stuff. Sometimes just – Tim LeCastro ain't hitting home runs, no matter what you do to him. You know what I mean? Not saying that those guys are that, but – some guys just have those barriers, and I hope that Mauricio's barrier isn't just he's not going to be able to make those decisions, because there's a lot of exciting stuff with him.
I think he'll definitely get chance after chance after chance after chance. I don't want to say he's going to overstay his welcome. I don't mean it like that, but he will be given every opportunity possible to prove that he can hang before someone on the team says, okay, let's call it a wrap here.
Trade him to the Reds for Alexis Diaz so the Mets could have Edwin and Alexis in the same bullpen.
Is he any good?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He was good last year.
All right. All right, so those are our emails for the week. I promise everybody, if you send us emails again, I will not be sitting them for a couple of months. They will be answered promptly. All right. Obviously, our email address is from complexthequeens@gmail.com. And you can send us any of those questions, comments, hate mail, spam, whatever that you have. you could follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there as well. I'm Steve at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElvlaHost343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from, rate and review it. And of course, we thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week. So until then, love the Mets.